Hi, everyone. Welcome to the 24 Communications Make It Happen podcast. I'm your host, Callie Hintze. At 24, we make it happen every day. We've built a fast-growing ad agency, combining our award-winning talent with client vision, translating real results to the bottom line. Here, we'll bring you stories, content, and more from real-life entrepreneurs, just like us, who make it happen every day in their own field. We hope you leave inspired and ready to make it happen in your own life. Thanks for tuning in. Okay, welcome to the September edition of the 24 Communications Make It Happen podcast. On today's episode, we have a really smart gentleman, Tom Brazil, who is the Chief Digital and Innovation Officer for Integrated Computer Solutions, longtime client of 24's. And Tom has recently written a book titled Agile Innovation Management System, Implementing an Agile Innovation Management System. So welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks, Callie.
So we're just going to jump right in here. Tell us a little bit about your background and your role as Chief Digital and Innovation Officer at ICS Inc.
Sure. So my background first, I'm a lifelong innovator. I actually started developing innovative software while I was in the United States Air Force back in 1984. I was working on some new mainframe computers on Okinawa, Japan. And then I spread that software throughout various bases in the Pacific, and word spread, and it allowed me to obtain a by-name assignment to Montgomery, where I worked at the Air Force Software Development Center. And there I was able to write, you know, innovative software for release to the entire Air Force this time. And then about 1990, I heard that Unisys, which was the maker of the mainframes that I was working on, they were trying to sell some commercial software to the Air Force for what then seemed like an astounding sum of money. It was $800,000. And I told the Air Force that I could write something better for free in about 6 weeks.
Oh, wow.
They said the procurement was way too far down the line for them to stop it unless I could do it in 2 weeks. So basically, I didn't sleep for 2 weeks and wrote a program that did everything their software did plus more. And it allowed the Air Force to take a look at it, and they did, and they stopped the procurement from Unisys. And of course, that ticked off Unisys because it cost them $800,000. Mm-hmm. So Unisys then sent me an offer letter to come work for them, which tripled my salary, and I said, of course. So I was able to then write innovative software for the Air Force through Unisys at that time. And that lasted a few years. Until a company that was a partner of Unisys, a French company called Systar, they asked me to join them. They were a unique company. They were dedicated to creating software that was such extreme value that it would create entirely new markets. And so I joined them, and it was a blast. And over 21 years there, we did that. We created five entirely new markets due to the breakthrough software. But unfortunately, in 2014, the owner retired and sold the company. And after a couple of years working there, Steve Goldsby, the visionary CEO of ICS, he asked me to join ICS in early 2016 to help him grow his company, because he knew that the prime customer segment for ICS, the Department of Defense, they're moving toward a deeper focus on innovation, and that certain long-term contracts that he needed to obtain access to would require extensive innovation capabilities. So I've known Steve for about 30 years, so it was an easy ask and an easy jump. And I joined as the Chief Digital Officer at that time, and we began work right away in the process of transformation. We started with the culture, getting personnel across leadership, management, service delivery, trained and certified in innovation management. And then we implemented an innovation management system. And so now today I'm a certified chief innovation officer. I'm a board member of the International Association of Innovation Professionals, which is the largest and only ANSI and ISO supported certifying body for innovation professionals. And I'm also a member of the technical advisory group creating the ISO innovation management standards globally. So today at ICS, I'm the chief digital and innovation officer. I run our ICS labs division, which is responsible for ICS innovation, our exploration, our development, implementation, and management. And I'm having the time of my life. I have great people working for me, and it's just an all-around great organization dedicated to customers' missions.
Are you looking for a creative team who can help bring your vision to life? At 24, we translate brand awareness straight to your bottom line. Check us out today at 24c.co.
So let's talk about your book a little bit. The book you recently published is about Agile Innovation Management Systems. And explain for those who may not be in IT that are listening, what exactly does that mean and why is it important, I assume, to any organization? But take us through that a little bit.
Absolutely. So first, I guess I need to make sure that we're on a level playing field when it comes to the language of innovation, because until recently, with the introduction of ISO 56000 innovation management standards, people have been free to define the language of innovation on their own terms. And so you've heard the saying, when everyone's an expert, no one's an expert. And that that's led people to call the mere process of managing ideas innovation management, when in fact, the management of ideas is just a small part of an entire innovation management system. So a complete innovation management system is a system defined to specifically transform ideas into value, right? So that's bottom line. And according to ISO 56000, though, the new management guidance standards, there are some principles that backstop innovation management best practices. And so those are things like having a focus on the realization of value, having future-focused leaders, ensuring that your strategic direction is integrated, making sure that you have a culture that supports innovation, the ability to support and exploit insights, how to manage uncertainty, making sure you're adaptable to these ever-increasing technological changes that are coming down the line. And of course, wrapping that all up in a systems approach so that you can have effective and efficient processes. So if you boil it all down, though, there's really just five key considerations to make it simple when you want to implement an innovation management system. So it's five simple questions. Why, what, how, who, and where? And so I'll go through each of these real quickly. The first one is why. And of course, that's related to the strategy of your organization. So why are you innovating? So any organization that wants to survive today, that has a strategy to achieve their growth, they must innovate. And your innovation intent, therefore, has to be aligned with your strategic intent. And that leads to the second question, which is what are you going to innovate? And this is your innovation portfolio. This is the pool of your ideas and your active projects that you build and maintain to be in alignment with your strategic intent. The third one is how, and that's the rigorous process that you absolutely need to efficiently produce repeatable and consistent outcomes, to ensure intelligent fast failures, et cetera. And then fourth is who. And it's fourth just in this list, but it's the first of importance, and that's the people, the culture. You need at least three key roles to have an effective innovation management system. The first is, of course, leadership. Leadership needs to understand the necessity of innovation and all of the different types of risk that are introduced in an innovating environment, and you must manage that risk. And then secondly, you need innovation managers, or we call them champions, but these are the people that manage your portfolio. They remove roadblocks when there's snags. They provide mentoring to the people, and they act as kind of the bridge between leadership and then the third role, which is the creative genius types. And I'm not talking about little Einsteins running around everywhere. It can be something as simple as somebody that's extremely creative, the ability to see 360 degrees around a problem, which is a very valuable ability, right? So, and then the fifth and the final question is where. And this is your infrastructure. It's the physical space for collaboration, or today, so many people during the age of COVID, it's the logical space. You know, it's your collaboration platforms, the tools you have for ideation and research, you know, your platforms that you use to prototype, develop, and implement and deploy your innovation. So together, those five tracks, strategy, portfolio, process, culture, and infrastructure, that's what makes up an innovation management system. But my book is about agile innovation management systems. And so there's a distinction. So why is there a need for agility here? And why is that important? For the second part of your question. So it becomes clear when you think about the pace of technological change today. So everybody knows this, right? So what we're experiencing today is exponential, right? So if you want to shape that to your advantage, your organization's advantage, you need to be agile in your innovation management system. And that means you need a mechanism that is structured to facilitate a more rapid development of capability. You need to make sure that your strategic objectives for your organization and their current priorities are tied to the makeup of your portfolio on a constant basis. And so that as events or conditions arise due to this ever-increasing pace of change, you can dynamically adapt. You can pivot. You can change direction as fast as the change occurs. And that's what you need today. You don't hear about 10-year plans anymore, for example. They're just not realistic. You know, heck, it was only about a dozen years ago or so that the iPhone changed the world, right? So you don't hear about 5-year plans, but you do hear about 3-year plans, and even those are refreshed annually. So you need this mechanism in place to allow you to accelerate your innovation activities, research faster, prototype quicker, fail faster, learn faster, et cetera. And that's what this book introduces. It introduces the concept of this agile innovation sprint, which has 6 different stages to help you go faster in all of those. And it's those iterative cycles that prescribe how you both implement and execute an agile innovation management system. So to sum it up, I would say the distinction between a regular innovation management system of the past and an agile innovation management system is it's all about being able to continuously adapt to this increasing pace of change.
And so any organization could implement these strategies. It's not limited to any one specific vertical. Like, I mean, my ad agency could do it, correct?
Your ad agency should be doing it. Absolutely. And again, it's because entire markets can appear and disappear in record time now, right? There's new software that is geared. It started coming out during the age of digital transformation. And the concept was, if in the past, as an example, if you had an idea and you went to a venture capitalist and said, I've got this great idea, I want to build a company around it, I need some funding. What they would say to you is, okay, you're going to need some office equipment, you're going to need some office space, you're going to need to hire some people, then you're going to need to be able to build a minimally viable product and attract potential buyers. And there's this whole big startup cost associated with it. But when digital transformation came around, there are companies that started creating all-in-one platforms that essentially said, we have a platform for you that allows you to do things like take your idea and develop it and also onboard your customers and your funding and do your marketing and your sales all in one package. So you don't need this massive expense and time to go from idea to value. And that's how these various companies can pop up overnight and just take control of markets. So yeah, it's important that everybody has an innovative mindset and understands, you know, that they're at risk at all time now.
Mm-hmm. And your company, ICS, you seem to be closely aligned with the IAOIP, the International Association of Innovation Professionals. What is important about that organization and your relationship with them?
Okay. So when I came on board to ICS, we wanted to align ourselves with real best practices by recognized thought leaders. Because, you know, if you do any searching on the internet, it's very easy to see. There's so many people that claim to be innovation experts. You know, there's like 5 million of them on LinkedIn alone, right? So, and almost all of them are self-proclaimed. And if you want to hire a good accountant as an example, you can be reasonably assured that if you hire a CPA, you're going to get someone that is educated and certified and can do the accounting work that you need, right? They know the best practices, they know the standards, the regulations, et cetera. And that's kind of what we are looking for. We wanted somebody that was legitimate, right? So the IAOIP, they wrote the Global Innovation Science Handbook. They call it the GISH, right? So it's commonly referred to as the innovation body of knowledge. It's like 896 pages or 900 something pages long. And it's all best practices across the entire gamut of innovation. And they're also distinct because they're the only nonprofit, right? So they're not in it for the money. They're in it to educate people and educate the world. And they're the only certifying body supported by ANSI, the American National Standards Institute. And of course, they're leading the way in the United States on the ISO 56000 innovation management standard. So they're legitimate, right? They also publish and manage the International Journal of Innovation Science. So we had their experts train and certify our people. And then that relationship built. We became sponsors of IAOIP. And, you know, today, if you take a look at it, it's, the relationship is extremely strong. I'm on the board of directors of IAOIP. Four of our certified managers of innovation are advisors to the board of directors. And they're trusted by our main customer segment, right? So our main customer segment's the Department of Defense. And just yesterday, as a matter of fact, we completed a 4-day innovation in military aviation training event for the Naval Air Warfare Aircraft Division. And it was an absolute success, right? So if you want the best, you go to the best. That's how it evolved. And we know that IAOIP is going to be driving innovation management best practices for years to come. And we've positioned ourselves in a very unique place, I think, in a very competitive market segment because of our relationship with IAOIP.
And talk a little bit about, you mentioned the Department of Defense earlier. Obviously, you have a lot of military-based customer clientele. How are the concepts that you talk about in this book, how are these customers applying those in their organizations and businesses today?
That's a great question. In the book, I discuss somewhere in the section on the implementation of the culture track, I believe, how we use culture sprints to research and analyze the culture of both our organization and our customers' organizations. Because we're a services company. So a lot of our people work directly within the customer environment. So culture is the first nut that you have to crack to build an organization that supports innovation, both for us and our customers, right? So if you don't get that right, you're not going to be successful. And one of these sprints was led by our Innovation Council member, who's also our Vice President of Service Delivery, Eric Pierce. He's also, of course, a certified manager of innovation. And his research in this sprint focused on our main customer segment, the DoD. And his goal was simply to understand the alignment between the culture our people experience within our corporate offices versus the culture our people experience when they're embedded within the workforce at one of our DoD customer sites. And it was fascinating. I mean, it revealed that the customer environment actually suppressed engagement. And it was due to their hierarchical mode of operation, which is typical in the DoD. Mm-hmm. But conversely, think about us, ICS. We designed our culture specifically to have an accountability framework, not a hierarchical framework. And that eliminates that focus, and it's a barrier to innovation. So our approach is about reaching across and working across the organization instead of from the top down, like in the DoD. But one thing that happened is that research and that result led us to further sprints on the culture side to determine what are the most effective forms of ideation in those environments that can work around those weaknesses. So today, I would say, you know, we have numerous examples how our people continuously innovate on behalf of our customers to help them achieve their missions. Things like lowering their costs, increasing the quality of their services to their customers. And Eric Pierce and his service delivery team, they drive innovation in and through all of our DoD customer accounts. And we've saved the government and taxpayers millions of dollars through these innovation efforts.
It's fascinating. So ICS is part of a joint venture effort with Red Team Engineering, and they were recently awarded a prime position on the Defense Information Systems Agency, or DISA for short. It's a multi-award indefinite delivery indefinite quantity contract to the tune of a ceiling cost of $7.5 billion, billion with a B. So talk about how Agile Innovation Management is relevant to that specific contract and how this will come into play as you guys start working on these task orders.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a long time coming. So I told you I joined in 2016, right? Mm-hmm. When I joined ICS, we started working on preparing for the proposal response for that contract. And of course, like you said, that was an IDIQ, indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity. And that's a scenario where the government essentially has a competition among bidders to get access to the contract vehicle. And for those that are actually awarded positions on that contract, only they get to then compete for the task orders, in a limited pool of awardees for the entire $7.5 billion potential over the next 10 years. So we needed access to a couple of these IDIQ contracts to achieve our growth goals. And that was an important one for us, right? So in order to get that one, the process of how we formed a winning team was the most crucial part. And of course, innovation management played a key role. So it involved a lot of research on the right partners. So SETI is the name of the contract. It stands for Systems Engineering, Technology, and Innovation. And we needed partners that were both highly capable in systems engineering, technology exploration, and innovation management, but also with exceptional records of past performance, companies that were well-liked, well-known within the DoD, and that would, you know, work well together as a team. And so getting back to the question, how does that relate to Agile Innovation Management? Well, the process that we executed to find the right partners involve best practices that today you read about in the ISO 56003 Innovation Management Guidance Standard related to tools and methods for innovation partnerships. So there's actually a best practice framework for determining how to enter into innovation partnerships, how you select partners, partner alignment, interactions, et cetera. So we designed our team, like you said, Red Team Engineering. It's a joint venture, a small business joint venture. You can take a look at rtejv.com. But it was strategically identified partners, and then we designed a structure for how we would interact with the government to serve the innovation systems engineering requirements for the DoD. And all of that was through the use of an Agile Innovation Management System.
Very good. What do you see happening in the world of innovation management over the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, because I'm on the technical advisory group to these ISO 56000 innovation management standards, I would say it's all going to center around that. That's the outlook right now. So we have some of the best innovative minds in the world from 45 different countries working on these. And there's 9 standards planned. And today there's already 4 released guidance standards in the series. I'll quickly go through what's out there right now and discuss what's coming. So 56,000, the baseline, that's fundamentals and vocabulary. This is the language I was talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Making sure that we can all speak with the same terminology, have the same understanding. And it's important for efficiency and innovation and the free, and this is the most important part to me, the free flow of talent between organizations. You don't get that today, right? Because some people will go to Stanford Design School and some people will go to MIT. Some people go to University of Kentucky. They all have innovation courses, but they all teach differently. So yeah, I can't bring somebody into my organization today as an example and expect them to be able to speak the same language, understand the same methods, terminologies, et cetera. All that is going to change. So that's the first one. Second one is 56,002. And this is the guidance on innovation management systems. And this is the best practices about what you need to consider to have an effective and efficient system for innovation and ensure consistent outcomes. The third one I talked about just a moment ago, this is tools and methods for innovation partnerships. The fourth is innovation management system assessments. And that helps organizations assess themselves and determine whether or not their innovation management system is performing and providing the value as expected. And then if you asked about the next 3 to 5 years, so I would say I would say the next 2 years, we're going to be releasing 56005, which is intellectual property management, important for protecting your IP. 56006, which is strategic intelligence management. 56007, which is idea management. And then 56008, which is innovation measurement. That's the important part, the qualitative and the quantitative metrics to get the proper feedback to make sure that you know exactly what you're doing. And so 3 to 5 years out, you're going to see the mass adoption of these standards. Today, you have 35 countries, I think, around the world that have already thrown out their own innovation management guidelines, and they've aligned ISO 56000 series. And so there's also a 56001 working group for an auditable standard. That's where you'd actually have somebody come in and validate from an auditing standpoint whether or not you are certifiable as a proper innovation management system. So the benefit of all these in the world of innovation management is that we're going to have, for the very first time, effective and efficient communication, number one, the language, the processes, the tools, the methods. Everyone's going to be able to speak and communicate in the same language. It's so important. And what's that going to do? That's going to accelerate the pace of innovation, okay, which is, again, another reason why it underscores the need for agility. So mm-hmm. I would say that's it for the next 3 to 5 years.
What is the most interesting innovation that you've created in your career?
No, Lord. I would say going back 35 years, interesting. The most interesting, I would say, was related to a wartime innovation. So innovating under the gun, so to speak. I don't know if you remember these commercials back in the mid-2000s. So IBM came out with a commercial series where they were gathering people together in a room, and then this one leader had a stopwatch, and he'd say, 1, 2, 3, innovate. And then everybody had to start innovating mm-hmm. under a time limit. And that's kind of what it felt like, because we had this emergency situation during the first Gulf War. Here's the background on it. So I was working for Unisys at that time as a senior systems analyst. And we had a Unisys mainframe that was hosted in Langley, Virginia, right, for the war, supporting the war. And it was running the combat support supply system and connected via satellites to the in-theater supply terminals at various bases in the Middle East. And an urgent condition came about where the mainframe crashed one day. And again, these are the people that are using it that actually order parts for the airplanes, right, mm-hmm. for maintenance and things like that. So the mainframe operators, they took a dump of the operating system. They recovered it and sent the dump to Unisys for analysis. But in the intervening time, waiting for an answer as to why it happened, why it crashed again. And so now you're having a real issue. You got to be able to keep your planes in the air and things like that. You're in the middle of a war.
Right.
So the dump analysis was done, and it determined that that the crash was because it exhausted something called the Q item limit. Right. And so this literally meant that when you send a message to somebody's terminal and need to print something, like, I don't know, a supply invoice or something like that, it would send that as a guaranteed message. And there was a limited number of these guaranteed messages that were configured. And so the dump showed that they ran out of these guaranteed messages. And that's just unheard of, right? It never happened before. And it's really strange. And so we had to think about why that would happen. And then, of course, it's crashing again. And we're trying to figure out what the heck is going on. And now Congress is getting involved because, it's a time of war, right? So we had to go through this five whys mechanism to understand what's going on. And the first question was, why is the mainframe crashing? And, well, it was running out of queue items. The second question is, why did it run out of queue items? And that was because all the printers ran out of paper at the same time. And that's really strange. How did they all run out at the same time and nobody fixed it? And the third one was, and how could they run out of paper at the same time? And then The logical answer is, well, all the terminal operators had to have not been on post at the same time. And the last question, which is, why would they abandon their post at the same time? And then this is what led to the identification of the root cause, which is every time that Saddam Hussein launched a Scud missile, the supply terminal operators had to go to shelter and they left their printers unattended. Yeah, crazy, right?
Wow.
So every time he launched a missile, our mainframe in Virginia crashed. So what a disconnection. But it, I mean, literally, that's why he asked five questions, five whys. So, you know, he did that 46 times during the Gulf War. So Congress was furious, demanding a solution to the problem. So, of course, you know, crap runs downhill. UNISA's headquarters demanded an answer from our group because we released the operating system to the Langley base, right? So, but serendipitously, I had just created a separate solution for the Air Force supply system, completely unrelated, to deliver messages in sequential order, because they had a scenario on the supply systems where sometimes they'd throw these messages to be printed and they'd arrive out of sequence. And so I implemented a solution for that. And I would basically just, you know, you provide them all to me, and then I'll send one piece at a time, wait for an acknowledgement from the printer, and then I'll send the next piece, right? It was seamless. You didn't know this because it kept on printing continuously. But behind the scenes, there weren't messages stacking up. So when UNISA's headquarters demanded an innovative response to this, I took that code and I threw some front end code onto it that would allow me to analyze which terminals had these outstanding messages and you know, capture those, write them to disk, and start sending them one at a time only. And then I tested it real quick, jumped on an airplane, went to Langley, and then taught the operators how to use it, right? So Unisys received a congressional letter of appreciation for our efforts at wartime. And that's I would say, the most interesting one. It wasn't the most fun because, again, you're innovating under the gun, a lot of pressure, but maybe all the other ones are for a later podcast.
That is unbelievable, Tom. Suffice it to say, you've left your mark on the world, literally.
It was fun.
So last but not least, I mean, this has been truly a fascinating conversation, and I will be sprinting to Amazon to get copies of your book for Christmas and client gifts. So tell people where they can find the book.
Yeah. So again, it is on Amazon.com. It's called Implementing an Agile Innovation Management System. Or you can just search for my name, Tom Brazil, on Amazon.com, and you'll have no problem finding it.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. I literally could do 10 more episodes with you just based on what you hit on here. So
I'm ready.
I appreciate you setting this up with me, and I really look forward to handing your book out and digging in deeper and implementing this in my organization. This is a real motivator. So thanks, Callie.
Appreciate it.
This concludes today's Make It Happen podcast. Thanks for listening.